Hello and welcome to The Two Dyspraxics. I'm Barbara Neal.
And I'm Matthew Munson.
Today we are delighted to welcome our very first guest on our podcast. He is dyspraxic hip-hop artist UK Craigie. So welcome, Craig. Very nice to have you join us.
Thank you very much. And I didn't know I was your first guest, so that makes it even more special for me. So thank you so much for having me. I really love what you guys do, and I'm looking forward to the chat.
Well, it's very kind of you to say so. Thank you. We love what we do well, to be fair, don't we, Matthew?
Oh, we do. And of course, no pressure, Craig, but especially because you're our first guest, you know, we've got high hopes.
I love it, mate. I love it. No pressure.
Yeah, we're setting a precedent. So this is what everybody else has to follow. So
amazing. I love it.
Good. Hopefully. Yeah. To start with, I think, you know, if we can ask you about when you were diagnosed with dyspraxia and how that happened, how that came about.
Yeah, okay, of course. So when I was younger in school, I think I was 10 years old when I was diagnosed. I was in year six of junior school just before I headed to high school. And I always had a little bit of extra help. The way my dyspraxia was most noticeable was, one, my handwriting is incredibly untidy, and two, my balance is awful. So like the two of those combined in school, I always kind of fell behind. And of course, the support really wasn't what it is now. Like the structure and the support in place wasn't as strong, especially at the school I was in. So I was kind of always treated like I was unintelligent more so than, you know, neurodiverse. So yeah, I got the diagnosis. I must have been about 10 years old. And it was from one of the assistant teachers. I had like special handwriting classes in school. And that's when I found out, basically. I was around 10.
Right. So that was picked up when you were at school then? It was picked up by your teachers, yeah?
Yes, yeah.
That's interesting. It was picked up so early, because for me, my first experience of hearing the word dyspraxia was when I was 15.
Wow.
I mean, this is back in the 90s, and yeah. You know, my deputy head teacher said to my parents, "Oh, hasn't Matthew done well, given the fact he's dyspraxic?"
Yeah.
At no point had they thought to say, "Oh, by the way, he's dyspraxic. We're going to put in extra help for you."
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I agree completely there. I concur with those comments, because I remember it was kind of, they knew when I knew, but there was never like that kind of broad spectrum of help available. It was only when I was like coming up to my GCSE years, and they were like, well, you can have a scribe and you can have a laptop. And it was only when things started to ramp up then. So I find that really interesting, because I felt that support was pretty much non-existent back in, like, when I was in school.
I can get that as well, because I went through my entire school life without ever having heard the word dyspraxia, never mind knowing I'm personally affected by it.
So yeah, of course.
I wasn't diagnosed until well into adulthood, when my son was going through the process of being diagnosed. So
that's what
I've done, dyspraxic. So
yeah, that's crazy, isn't it? I mean, that must have like impacted you guys so heavily. I mean, I know that I still suffer like the effects of basically feeling like I was left like hanging to dry by school. So you guys must have like really wild experiences and stories of how it affected you.
Because Craig, for you, if you don't mind me asking, how old are you? What's your name?
I'm 31.
Interesting. Oh, so you didn't go. So for me and you, because I'm 39, so you weren't at school probably much later than me. In that sense, that's interesting. Yet we've had quite different experiences of kind of education.
Yeah, completely.
That's interesting.
Yeah, actually, my eldest son is 32 now, so he would have been diagnosed. How old was he? I knew because a friend noticed. She has a dyspraxic son, and she noticed some of the traits that my son has. And so she suggested I ask for an assessment, and it uphill struggle to get the school to agree. So he was finally when he got to secondary school, but it was really tough going that. But he's around same age as you, so similar kind of time frame, though I'm not sure your experiences would have been the same.
Yeah, I'm with you completely. I agree that I think I was more so like kind of pushed through, because it started to create like behavioral problems, and I was always felt like I was let down by school. So I kind of tried my best to not go, and I didn't put much effort in. I always felt like I wasn't necessarily believed. Like, I would tell them that I'm struggling, and I would tell them that I find this really difficult. And it was almost like I almost felt, I suppose at a young age, you were a little bit more paranoid. I almost felt like the teachers were just laughing at me. Like, I was just an example of, like, this is what you don't behave like. This is what you're supposed to look like. You've got handwriting classes. Why are you not trying? Why does your handwriting still look like you're 5 years old? It's just, you know, it just wasn't a pleasant experience.
God, Craig, I tell you what, you're talking my language completely. That really strikes home. It's like, well, you've been diagnosed. What's wrong with you? You know what's wrong with you, so now you can deal with it.
Exactly. It was almost like they expected a diagnosis to be a cure. Like, you know, we know that you've got this going on, so why does your handwriting still look this poor? Why is your attention span so short? Why do you struggle so much in PE? Why do you not want to be here? And it almost felt like my mental well-being and the struggles that come along with being dyspraxic were just completely ignored.
I can respect that. And actually, one thing I'd actually wanted to ask you as well was, this conversation Barbara and I have had a lot over the years is kind of about, certainly Barbara and I have found that we're quite creative people.
Yes.
You know, I'm a writer, Barbara's a writer.
Yes.
And, you know, did you find, I mean, obviously your creativity's come out in your music.
Yes.
Do you find that, in your opinion, are you quite creative? Was that quite strong for you growing up?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I used to use, because obviously the dyspraxia led to other issues and problems, like the fact of feeling not being listened to made me quite anxious and quite depressed. So I'd always write a lot of poetry as a kid. I never knew that it would develop into hip-hop music at a young age, but I'd write to escape. It was a massive form of escapism. So I've always been quite creative like that. And then obviously, as that's transcended into adulthood, it's been something that I'm thankfully, like, I've been able to make a career from. But yeah, creativity has always been massive. It almost feels like the creative side of me makes up for the lack of strength in other areas, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Do you know, Barbara, I think this guy, it's like he's us, isn't it? It's like a conversation.
But I differ from both of you in one respect, I think, because my handwriting was never messy. It was always very neat, but it would take me ages and ages to do it. So I got the label slow while I was growing up. Which
Yeah, that rings home. I get that all the time. Slow and daft, slow. Just not very nice things to be said, like, from a teaching perspective. It wasn't so enjoyable as a kid. I mean, as I've grown older and I learned a lot of coping mechanisms as I was growing up because of it, like, I wouldn't change it. I wouldn't swap being dyspraxic for not being dyspraxic. I think that the benefits are tremendous.
Yeah, I got that. We've had this conversation about, if you could take a pill and cure, in inverted commas, your dyspraxia, would you do it? And Matthew and I have both said categorically, no, of course not. You know,
Absolutely not. I think that you take a massive slice of your entire makeup as a person, your personality, everything about yourself would change, wouldn't it? Not a chance.
Yeah, I can't begin to imagine what it would be like, actually. But firstly, I think it's something, dyspraxia is not something that needs to be cured. There's nothing wrong with us. It's a neurological difference, that's all. It's just that we're different from neurotypical people. But then everyone is different from everyone else anyway.
Yeah.
But something I'm interested in, what sort of challenges did you face when you were developing your career?
A lot of challenges basically came from the fact that I struggled a lot with self-doubt. I struggled a lot with anxiety. I struggled a lot with those things. And before I could really channel them into music, it was always that kind of almost like stage. Oh my goodness, what if people laugh at me? Which seems surreal now, because obviously I'm completely different and I couldn't care what anybody thinks. But like, when I was first starting out, I was so afraid, and I was like, what if people judge me? What if people hate me? What if nobody likes me? What if everyone tells me I suck? Like, I was really, really just not where I wanted to be in terms of self-opinion, really. I had such a low sense of self-worth that it kind of just impacted me in every area. And it was only until I kind of tackled that, which music helped me do. I mean, in my music, there's a lot of, it revolves around kind of like, it's almost like self-therapeutic. My whole style is like very personal, grief, loss, mental health, depression, anxiety, we cover those things. So it's almost like a massive session of therapy. And that's basically the biggest challenge, was learning how to accept myself and learning how to be comfortable with who I am. When you've spent so many years of your life being, you can't do this, that, you're slow, you're daft. You know, it's a struggle. So that was the biggest one, was more the mental hurdles to overcome, really.
Yeah, so it was your self-doubt, I suppose. And that's instilled in us, I believe, you know, during school particularly, because we're dyspraxic. I think that's where that low self-esteem comes from, that we then have to overcome.
Yeah, I agree with you completely. I think the fact that, especially at school, and it does seem different, which obviously we can go into in a little while. It seems different now, but back in the day when I was growing up, it was always like you were compared to people who were better at doing things in the teacher's eyes. Well, why can't your handwriting be like this person's handwriting? Why are you always late for things? Why is your shirt not buttoned up correctly? Why do you look a bit scruffy? Like, you know, like it was always just like, it felt like you were being attacked from all angles, really, when all that we really need is probably a little bit more encouragement, an arm around your shoulder, and another, come on, you can do this. You've got, you know, almost like a parental figure, but it was almost very a very authority-centered kind of place, school. But I agree with you, it was very much ingrained from a young age.
Craig, sorry to interrupt, Bob, but just one thing I was wanted to ask, and it's literally just come into my head, that you were talking about obviously your career, and you know, obviously you travel a lot for your career. And for me, when I was younger, something I had an issue with, and obviously I'm not in the same kind of field as you, but one thing I had huge kind of anxiety with when I was younger and trouble was traveling. I was well into my 20s before I ever felt really kind of confident traveling in any way. Was that an issue for you in terms of, for me, it was about the planning, the organization, getting there. How am I going to get there? How am I going to cope with all the noises and the sounds and the unusual stuff that I'm going to see when I'm there? Was that an issue for you, and how did you deal with it if it was?
In some ways, yes. The noises and sounds that I'm not that very sensitive, they don't tend to so much planning on stationization, however. I'm the worst, honestly. I have to plan like meticulously. My gran always used to say to me when I was growing up, "You'll be late for your own funeral," because I could never be on time for anything at all. So anything when I'm traveling, like even like I moved out of my hometown like 4 years ago. I live in Merton. I'm from just outside of Manchester originally. Any trips back home, anytime I need to catch any form of public transport anywhere, I have to plan well in advance. I need to set off like half an hour before I intend to, because I'm terrible at it. Like I really can't help it. People think that I do it on purpose sometimes because I'm just like awfully late for everything. It is something. I mean, growing up and becoming a father helped with that more than anything, because obviously you can't say, well, I'm an hour late picking the girls up, because I just got carried away. I had a dyspraxic moment. I'm sorry that I'm picking them up at 4:30 and the home time's at 3:30. Like that massively helps, because obviously you have to, you've got to be there for those things. But before that, like before I had children, oh my goodness, I was the worst. I've been fired from jobs. I've been all sorts, just terrible.
I also share your fear, if you like, of traveling on public transport, which every time I go somewhere it has to be like a military operation. I have to plan and thank goodness for Google Earth so I can see my destination.
Oh, you are not kidding. Google Maps and the estimated arrival time has probably saved my life more times than I can count. It is just a godsend.
Yeah, I think the only kind of public transport I feel really comfortable with is the tube in London.
Yes.
Because it's so logical and great. You only have to make like a couple of decisions each time.
Excellent.
Yeah, the line you want, and then you've got a choice between either east and west or north and south.
Yeah, brilliant. So that's what we like.
Yeah, it's great. If all public transport could be like that, hey, how brilliant.
You were not kidding.
But just out of curiosity, do you drive?
No, I don't drive. It's something that I've never really been interested in. Like, just never took my fancy at all. Like, when I left school, never interested me. When I went to work, never interested me. Like, it never has. We've got really good public transport links here. Like, we're in Merseyside, right by the sea, and the transport links are amazing. Like, if I need to get back home to Manchester, I can be there in an hour. So I've never really had any need for it. It's always just been like a like an extra massive expense that just never made sense to me, really.
Yeah, I think that's pretty much the same for you, isn't it, Matthew? You know, you've always lived near the station and so on, so it's been quite...
Yeah, funny enough, as soon as Craig said that, it made me smile because I just thought, yes, he's we're on the same team. Because Barbara, you drive, but again, you know, I mean, I tried taking driving lessons when I was 17, 18, because that was a thing that you kind of all my mates were doing. So I thought, well, I'll probably like a lot of people back then, I wanted to be the same, I wanted to fit in, I wanted to do what everyone else was doing. And then I took 6 driving tests, and I thought, and eventually I thought, what the hell am I doing? I'm dreading going for the test every time. I'm dreading going for the lesson every week. That wasn't the driving instructor. It was great. But I thought, I'm hating this. I'm miserable. I'm spending money on something that I'm not going to any good at. What the hell am I doing? It took me about 2 years to realise that I am being stupid.
There's nothing better than that realisation, though, is there, of like, hang on, I can save loads of money here just by stop being daft. That must be like such an empowering feeling.
Oh, it really is. And you can just sort of stick 2 fingers up with it and go, no, I'm doing what I want to do for a change.
I love it.
It was definitely different for me because I was really motivated to learn to drive, and it was a lot cheaper back in those days. It was a hell of a long time ago when I did it. And it did take me 3 goes at my test. So I passed on the third attempt. But it wasn't easy, and but I was determined to do it. So
it comes across that you're very strong-willed. You seem like somebody who, once you set your mind to doing something, you won't be defeated. If it had taken you 15 attempts, you'd have still...
Yeah, I think that's down to dyspraxia, really and truly. I think that's the same for an awful lot of us from some of the conversations I've had with other dyspraxic people. So it seems to be one of the positives that we can take out of it, determination.
Yeah, most definitely.
Craig, just to cut in for me, it's another question that's literally just occurred to me, something I'm saying a lot today, but obviously being a musician, I've just been looking at your social media presence just because I'm nosy.
Yeah.
And what, as a musician, do you play instruments as part of your rapper persona?
I mostly just stick to the vocals. I do play a little bit of guitar, but I'm really quite fortunate. I work quite closely with an acoustic guitarist from California, and he normally plays, because nearly everything that I make is acoustic. Like, my entire style is very personal, very stripped back, guitar-based heavily, no drums, just like, almost like the way that I describe it is like having an intimate conversation with me. If you listen to one of my albums, I want you to go away with the feeling like you know me, like we could go for a beer together or we could go for a coffee together and we'd feel comfortable. So I normally I do a lot of the mixing and mastering myself. I do the vocals and I play a little bit of guitar. As opposed to like, I have always found it quite difficult. I can play a little guitar, but I often find that it takes me a very long time unless I'm really, like, really into something, like with hip hop. Sorry, I'm completely diverting the topic. With hip hop and with the rapping stuff, when I first started, I was so bad. I was so, so bad. I knew that I wanted to do it and I knew that I could do it if I tried. But the first time, like, my entire rhythm, I don't know if your guys' rhythm is the same, but when I first started, my rhythm was all over the place. Like, I had no kind of notion of keeping in time with a beat or keeping my vocals where they were supposed to be. And then that's a skill that I've had to learn, and it's taken years to just be able to keep in rhythm and to do what I'm supposed to. Now I can do it effortlessly, but it's taken such a long time. Like, to master anything just seems to take me an age.
I think that's also a dyspraxia trait, because it seems that if we really want to learn something, we can, and it's probably going to take longer and be more difficult. But when we get there, we're good at it. You know?
Yeah, agreed.
Yeah, that seems to be the case, you know. So it's worth being determined if there's something you really want to do, because we will master it eventually.
Absolutely.
Interestingly, that you say that you have a guitarist. Do you live near each other, or are you?
No, he lives in California. We do everything. He's in California, so he'll send things over to me, and then I'll send things over to him. Like, he works pretty much on a basis, like, he works for me, so I will pay him for the compositions, and then I will own the compositions and the rights to the compositions, if you know what I mean. So he gets a credit with all of the songwriting and things like that, but the compositions are solely owned by me. I have a couple of agreements similar to that with people who live over here as well, friends who live over here. So I work with quite a few producers, and then I handle the vocals, the mixing, the mastering, and releasing the music. But yeah, in terms of playing instruments, I really do struggle.
that really interests me, that you're working with somebody who's a long way away, because thanks to the internet, my cousin is actually in a prog band, and none of them live near each other. There's one in Tokyo, there's one in Canada. You know, and it's fantastic, and they've released a few albums now. So I just think,
honestly, it's brilliant. It really is. I mean, for the last album that I made, it was called I Can't Sleep, and I worked with musicians from England, from Canada, from America. Like the openness and how accessible it is to work with people. Because obviously everything can be done online. It's remarkable. Like, you can pick up your phone or head on the laptop, and you can find somebody from literally anywhere in the world. It's amazing. If you use the internet correctly and all the tools that we've got, we've literally got the world in our hands.
Yeah.
But I think that's interesting, isn't it? Because, I mean, it's like this pandemic at the moment. You know, if this pandemic had happened 20 years ago, like, my son's 10, and, you know, during the first lockdown, obviously he was working from home and doing all his learning at home. But because he could, you know, we've got broadband, Google Classroom, all this kind of stuff. 20 years ago, 30 years ago, that stuff simply didn't exist. And it's the same kind of for your industry. I think as well, technology does support us as neurodiverse people kind of more generally. Suddenly we've got this, because we think in different ways and we process and see things differently, that actually you know the world is our oyster in a way that other people might or might not think the same thing. You know, I'm not saying that everyone doesn't think the same way as us. Of course they do, in terms of technology, but you know, our creativity, because of our mindset, we can broaden our horizons in different ways. I agree with you fully.
I really do.
Well, I think the technology is actually essential for us, to be honest with you, because I mean, Matthew and I, for a start, would never have written novels if we had to do it by hand.
Well, yes. No, I agree with you there. That's really interesting as well. I agree. Like, it's crazy. Like, just that alone, being able to write, like, when you say that, I write all of my songs on my phone and then sync them up to my laptop, to my PC, and grab them from there. Like, you were completely right. Just the writing aspect alone is so beneficial to us.
Yeah, definitely. So it's like when you mentioned earlier about your handwriting being untidy and you get into trouble for it, it really irritates me when I hear about parents who are making their dyspraxic children practice their handwriting, because we just don't need it nowadays, do we? You know, as long as you can.
No, I agree with you. I agree completely. It becomes more and more, it's closer to being obsolete every day, isn't it? I can't remember the last time that I actually sat down with a piece of paper and a pen and wrote anything at all.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, shopping lists can go on your phone. I make all the notes to on my phone, then transfer it like you do. You know, if I have ideas for writing, it goes on my phone first and then transfer it to iPad or whatever.
So. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. That's the thing. I mean, that would be the worst one with me. Like, if I had all these wonderful ideas for lyrics, for songs and stuff, if I wrote them down and I was in a rush because I was excited to get it out, I wouldn't be able to read it anyway. I'd be standing in front of a microphone looking at my handwriting. What the hell does this say? Like, I wouldn't be able to do it in any way. It would never work.
Yeah, well, that sounds about right. Like both Matthew and me.
Oh God, yeah. Craig, for your youngest daughter, obviously you mentioned that she's going through a diagnosis. Is she, from what you can see, is she experiencing the education system in the same way as you, or are things different because you know almost what to expect? You know,
honestly, it's been like chalk and cheese. It's been something that I've never experienced before. It's so much better these days. I was always expecting it. I've got two daughters, one's 9 and one's 6. Now, the eldest, she doesn't suffer with any neurodiverse problems. But the youngest, as soon as she was starting to grow up, like, I noticed a couple of things, like a balance and just a couple of other telltale signs. So I've been pushing quite heavily with the school, you know, to get referrals, to get everything in place. And to be completely honest with you, aside from the ages of 4 to 5, the whole process has been painless.
Apologies for the audio problems that we had. So we had to actually cut the podcast slightly shorter than we'd hoped. But very grateful thanks to Craig for appearing on the podcast. And if you'd like to hear more about his music, then we will be putting a link up so that you can contact him and discover more. Thanks a lot, Craig. Take care. We'll see you soon.